Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying tale is about this man who actually inherits his grandfather's house and cornfield, as his grandfather has been missing for the past 4 months and was declared dead. But he has reasons to believe that he may still be alive and out there. Now, what would you do for your grandfather? Let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. A few years ago, my grandfather went missing. I moved into his house immediately, and when he was declared legally dead after a while, I ended up inheriting it. It would lead to a terrible experience, one that I barely survived. For months after his disappearance, I had the same reoccurring dream. My grandfather, Chester Middleton, would be standing in the corner of the fields behind his house, his back turned to me, the night sky in gray, black, and covered in clouds that rushed by, as if they had been previously recorded and now the video was playing on fast forward. He had gone missing a few months ago, and there had still been no sign of him or his body being found. "Grandpa," I said, walking up behind him, shivering and barefoot. "You're back?"
"Not yet, Johnny,"
he said in his usual slow way. It was strange to have a conversation with someone's back, and I had to lean forward to hear his quiet words.
"But soon I will be. You will find me and bring me home."
"But how do I find you? It's so dark here," I said, squinting just to make out his silhouette. I moved closer to him.
"You'd be surprised at what you can find if you go looking in dark places," he said. "And some of those things will also find you."
He turned then, showing half of his face blown off, the teeth and bones slowly showing off his internally grinning skull.
"Look at how much they've changed me, Johnny. Look."
He rubbed both of his gnarled, calloused fingers over his face, a gesture I had seen him do countless times. A waterfall of blood dripped down his body from his half-missing face. But the strange black soil where he stood drank up the drops instantly, leaving no trace at all. I awoke screaming, covered in sweat. I ripped the covers off and jumped out of bed, pacing, looking out the window into the fields behind the house. I expected to see his shadow there, just like in the dream, but it was just dark fields, extending for acres. As time went on, this nightmare became a daily burden. I became afraid to go to sleep, and when I did fall into an exhausted slumber, I always woke up screaming. The dream became longer, and at the end, my grandfather would always point to a trail in the corner of the field, one that never existed as long as I was living at this house. Sometimes it would start to rain fire, or the trees along the borders of the field would begin to drip red blood all over the ground. White, rotted hands often reaching out of the trail, grasping at anything and everything, yet finding no purchase. I tried taking sleeping pills, opiates, cannabis, heavy doses of alcohol, and whatever else people said would give me a dreamless, peaceful sleep. Nothing worked. I lost weight, dark circles beginning to appear underneath my eyes, my face becoming more and more gaunt with the passing of the weeks. Even in my waking hours, I still saw my grandfather's face, destroyed, bloody, the skull underneath frozen in the endless smile of the dead. It became so bad I began to consider things I would never have thought of before. One of my friends from college had been heavily interested in the occult, eventually joining a secretive group known as the Golden Dawn, who were supposed practitioners of black magic. I called him up on FaceTime one afternoon, nearly hallucinating from sleep deprivation. The lights seemed much brighter, and I became tired after doing nearly anything. I went to work in a fugue-like state, and the days all blended together into one never-ending hallucinatory delirium. "Johnny, buddy, how you doing?" my friend Nathan said in a calm demeanor he nearly always used. "You look a little rough around the edges." "Not good," I said, explaining how my grandfather had gone missing, and how my reoccurring nightmare of the secret trail had plagued me for weeks straight. "Is this the house that your grandfather left you? The one with the small private graveyard was built on the border of the property?" I paused, trying to remember if Nathan had ever been here to visit me. My mind moved sluggishly, and memories came slowly to me now. Then I remembered he had visited me once here during our first year at college. "How do you remember that?" I asked him, genuinely curious for the first time since beginning this conversation. He laughed. "Don't you know who is buried there? It is kind of a famous, or more likely, infamous," he said. I shook my head. "I have no idea what you're talking about," I said. "Well, it was long before either you or I were born, back in the early 1900s. A farmer there killed his whole family one night. They were snowed in, and some people just think he got cabin fever. Maybe they're right, I don't know. His name was Harris McCoon, and he went through the house slitting the throats of his two daughters before moving on to his wife. None of them ever spoke up or tried to fight back, at least according to the police. It was like they were all in a stupor or hypnotized, or maybe just drugged or something, I don't know. He ended his killing spree by writing a suicide note with his own blood. It was full of rambling and lunacy, talking about how he needed to protect his family from demons who lived in the fields. But he also said there was a secret trail back there that led somewhere else. Some dark, horrifying place, where the dead don't stay dead, and the dirt of the trail itself drinks blood, forever thirsty for more." I paused, waiting for the punchline. "Are you serious right now?" I asked. "How the F did no one ever tell me about this mass murder in my house? And how do you know so much about it?" "I grew up in this town too," he said. "I listen and read. Clearly, you do not. The history teacher at the high school knew all about it, as well as the members of the historical society. I guess you just never asked the right questions, or really, many questions at all." "Is there anything I could do about it?" I asked. There was a long pause. "I'll talk to a couple of others in the Golden Dawn," Nathan said. "Maybe this weekend I can stay over. We will figure out something." The rest of the week passed by slowly, but at least I had hope. I would see Nathan on Friday, and maybe this would all be over. I could finally sleep again without waking up screaming every night. I could finally be at peace in my own house. Things got worse Thursday night. I had the same reoccurring dream, my grandfather pointing at the mysterious hidden trail and the trees all weeping blood in an eerily lit twilight world. I was standing in the field when, without warning, grasping hands latched onto my body, forcibly pulling my left arm while digging into my skin with fingers that felt as hard as iron. I shrieked in mortal terror, spinning around. There was a man in clothes that would have been in fashion around World War I, his teeth covered in blood, small trickles of it running down his chin. His eyes were burning in their intensity, his dilated pupils staring into my face with an insane sheen.
How much more must I bleed them?
He asked, his voice sounding slurred and slowed. I kept having to stop and spit out blood.
They told me if I bled them, I'd find peace. How much more, man? I can't do this much longer. I cut their throats while they slept. I did everything they asked of me. So why?
Looking down at where he had...
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Grabbed my arm. I saw deep claw marks. I looked back up quickly at the man, stepping back. His fingers were, in reality, white bone, sharpened to dagger-like blades. Harris McCoon turned, and the back of his head showing, and I saw right into his brains. It looked as if he had put a shotgun or pistol directly into his mouth and blew the entire back of his skull off. There was an exit wound the size of an orange, giving a perfect view of the gore that had once been his brain and skull. Behind him, I saw a middle-aged woman and two young girls. They all had their throats slashed open, gurgling and choking, their dilated pupils staring straight at me as waterfalls of blood ran down the front of their bodies.
"I bled them for the blind god," Harris McCoon said. "How much more blood does he need?"
At that point, I woke up in my bed, covered in sweat. A stinging sensation in my arm caused me to look down, where I saw the slash marks from his razor-sharp bone claws on my left arm. Nathan ended up showing with another woman I had never met before. He said she was a third-order magus, and one of the leading practitioners of both black and white magic in the southeastern United States. None of that meant anything to me, but I was glad I was no longer alone dealing with this nightmare. Nathan always reminded me of some German super soldier, a topic I made jokes about with him. He stood over 6 feet tall with blonde hair and blue eyes. He was a clear gym rat at that, with huge arms and a thick chest. In contrast, the woman standing next to him was much shorter and older, though she didn't appear to have a wrinkle on her middle-aged face. Her hair was pure black and her eyes were wide and blue.
"This is Nora," Nathan said.
I went to shake her hand, but she walked right past me, looking out into the cornfields.
"There's something different about this place," she said in an airy voice. I felt the need to roll my eyes, but I remembered that they had volunteered to come out of their way and spend the night simply to help me. And moreover, I remember what desperate straits I was in. These people may be my only hope. And then she said something that sent chills down my spine. She pointed at the same spot my grandfather always pointed to in my dreams.
"The universe is thin here. It is a point where some may cross over, or those beings from the astral worlds may enter into ours. I'm not surprised this house has been the scene of so much trouble. The killings of the entire family may not be the cause of the thinning, but an effect. The dark spirits from the higher dimensions can use the weak minds of their afflicted by insanity, grave physical illness, or lifelong addiction to do their bidding."
She stopped, taking a deep breath and closing her eyes. I didn't know if this was part of some act or not, but I just stood there, watching and waiting. After a few moments, she opened them again.
I believe your grandfather somehow ended up in that same place. He is calling out for you, asking for help. Or at least, his spirit is. I believe his body is dead.
So what can I do? I asked. She looked at me, her large blue eyes as cold as ice. A shiver ran down my back, and I turned away from her intense gaze.
You could go and help him, young man. What else are you going to do? Leave him there for all eternity?
With that, she turned her back to me, pulling her purple shawl closer around her neck. I saw a quick glimpse of a tattoo, with a white eye built into the center of a pyramid on her wrist. Nathan and Nora went to his car, pulling out various ingredients to begin the ritual that they assured me would open up the trail to us. I saw Nora with an ancient-looking leather-bound tome whose title read, The Book of Gates. An hour later, we were assembled at the spot where the field met the forest. A couple hundred feet to the left, and the old cemetery lay in a clearing in the woods. But where we all looked now was just a cluster of pricker bushes and trees. It looked impenetrable and swampy. Nathan began taking the necessary objects out of the box, while Nora still held her spellbook. 13 black candles with human remains mixed into the wax, he said to me, smiling as he spread them out in a circle. He reached back into the box and pulled out a glass vial. Some dirt from the grave of the murderer. Next, he pulled out a branch. The flowering branch of Datruna. And last of all, he pulled out another glass vial. This one was red. The blood of a murdered virgin.
How do you get this stuff? I asked him. He looked at me with a half smile.
Datrua grows wild around here. As for the rest, ask me no questions, brother, and I will tell you no lies. Nora finally spoke, looking up from her spellbook at the moonlit sky.
The time to perform the ritual is running out, she said. We must begin immediately.
I will not recount here how the ingredients were used, as I do not wish to be responsible for anyone else trying to repeat the ritual. The horrors that ritual unleashed cannot be easily comprehended. As Nora finished speaking the last Latin incantation necessary to open the hidden trail, a feeling of anxiety and terror overtook my heart. I wished I could just run away at that moment and never come back to this cursed house. But it wasn't just the house, I knew. My grandfather might be out there, and if so, I needed to help him. One moment, I was looking at the thick wall of bushes, ferns, and swampland. As soon as I blinked my eyes, a trail was there with soil as black as obsidian. I took a step back, falling on my back as I tripped over a candle.
It's okay, Nathan said, bending down to give me a hand.
The ritual worked perfectly. We have opened the pathway. I looked up, squinting and peering down the black trail. Everything looked strange. The trees were not native to this region. They had dark red bark, and thorns ran all up and down their exterior. Their leaves were carved into the shape of a scythe. And, strangest of all, they exuded a resinous sap that trickled down their bark. A sap that looked like thick, dark blood. Nathan reached into his pack, pulling out two pistols. He handed one to me, giving me his crooked half-smile.
Just in case, he said simply.
I took it, making sure the safety was on. He handed me a simple chest holster as well, which I put over my shirt. Nathan had an identical one under his jacket already, which he used to holster his pistol. Picking up his bag, he nodded at Nora and me.
All right, let's do this,
he said excitedly.
Nora shook her head.
You better tamp down your glee, young man, she said. There are things along that trail that would drive you insane simply by looking at them. There are things that will suck your blood out or dismember you while you're still alive. Remember, we are only going to get his grandfather out of there. Then we are leaving immediately. If he is dead, we will free his spirit. If he is alive, then we will grab him and guide him out. Understood?
Nathan nodded, apologizing sheepishly.
Keep an eye out also for what we seek. The bark of Zakum, the blood of an ancient one, and the soil from the endless stairs.
I found this curious, but I didn't ask about it at the time.
We started walking. The moment we passed through the threshold of the trail, I could feel it. Like being directly underneath high-voltage power lines, and a smell like ozone filled the air. It wasn't unpleasant, but it seemed to indicate that whatever place this was, it was full of energy. As we walked further away from the threshold, I looked back, expecting to see the field and house in the distance. But to my surprise, there was only an endless winding black.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Back trail behind me, leading into a group of desolate rocky canyons that I had never seen before. Apparently, we were stuck here.
Up ahead, I heard a chattering of teeth and a low moaning noise. I came across a sharp turn to the right, and a massive tree stood there, hundreds of feet tall. It had no leaves or fruits. Instead, demonic heads hung from the branches, swaying softly in the wind. Their faces were flat and deflated looking. Their eyes were pure black or glowing red. They opened and closed their mouths slowly in time with the breeze, creating a constant chittering noise. It was as if they were freezing to death, even though the air was warm and humid.
Nora put out a hand, stopping us abruptly in front of the tree. Beyond, I saw the black trail split into seven, some ascending and others descending. There was no signs or indications of which trail was the right one.
The tree of Zakum,
Nora said softly, looking at the strange fruit the tree produced. As she said its name, the eyes of the demon heads all turned to look at her. Their expressions ranged from fury to disinterest to obvious pain. Their sunken, emaciated faces then examined me and Nathan.
Do you know the way? Nathan asked her.
She shrugged, apparently unafraid of the horrific sight in front of us.
They know the way, she said, pointing to the heads. We only need to ask them.
I had my doubts about this, but said nothing. She stepped forward.
Those who are one with the Holy Tree of Zakum, she said, we ask for your help. We are travelers lost on the trail. We look for one who has come here before us, an old man who came from the fields nearly 4 months ago. His name is...
She turned to me.
His name is Chester Middleton, I said loudly and confidently, stepping forward.
He is my grandfather. He has gone missing from my world. Have you seen him?
At first, nothing happened, though the chattering of teeth stopped. Hundreds of pairs of eyes focused on me in the utter silence. Not a bird sang or an insect hummed in the stillness. All at once, the mouths of every decapitated head opened, and a voice emerged from all of them simultaneously. It was deep and gurgling.
We have seen the one you seek, they said in unison.
Give us a sacrifice of blood and we will tell you the way.
I looked at Nora, one eyebrow raised. She nodded at me, holding out a dagger.
They want some of your blood to feed the tree, she said.
I gapped at her.
Just a little. Just cut your arm or hand or wherever you feel like and leave a few drops of blood on the roots of the tree. They won't help us without a sacrifice from you, no matter how small it may seem. After all, you're the reason we're here.
I took her ceremonial dagger, glazing down at the rubies and opals that adorned the handle, the curved blade with strange hieroglyphic markings in its steel surface. I did as she said. Walking up to the tree, standing directly next to it, I realized just how huge it really was. I had seen the redwoods in California, and this was taller than any of those. Its black bark looked ancient, with deep gouges and cracks running up and down as far as the eye could see. I pulled my left arm out where the trunk disappeared into the soil, putting a small slash into the top of my skin. A small trickle of blood ran down my skin, dropping into the soil below. As soon as it touched the dark ground, the earth sucked it in. The trees seemed to sigh with pleasure, the heads all smiling at once in unison, their eyes all looking down at me.
Your grandfather is on the seventh path, they said. Seven, the holy number, the number of strength and mysticism. Take no other path unless it's death you seek, and you may find it regardless.
Then they went silent, closing their mouths. A strong breeze blew down the path, and they began to chatter again, returning to their previous expressions of mixed pleasure, pain, fury, and sadness. Nora stepped forward, taking the dagger back. She peeled a small piece of the black bark off of the tree, wrapping it up in silken cloth and placing it into her bag. I wiped the blood away on my shirt, returning to my group. We looked at the seven trails. I wondered where the first six led. Without hesitation, though, we took the last one, walking forward to find my grandfather, or whatever was left of him, of this cursed place.
As we walked forward on the trail, we saw a flickering light up ahead, illuminating the blood-red trees in a fiery glow. What is that? I asked Nathan and Nora. They walked in front of me, side by side, quiet silhouettes in the dark night. A creeping sense of dread rolling through me.
Whatever it is, it belongs to the trail, Nathan said. This trail is older than human civilization, older than humanity itself, most likely. The ancient ones have long lived in the space between universes, hiding in plain sight, coming out when they need the feed. They used to feed on the pain and suffering of animals. But ever since humans began to spread, they've grown accustomed to more sophisticated tastes, let's say.
Many of the ancient stories are based on true places, Nora continued. The River Styx and the ferryman Charon, for example, were based on visions of the mystics from ancient times. The souls of the dead wander in places like this, eternally trying to cross over to the other side. Their loneliness and despair feeds the beings in this plane of evidence.
But we have protection against them, right? I said. They'll just keep walking, right?
Well, some, Nathan admitted. But some of them might drive you mad just by looking at them. There is no such thing as guaranteed absolute protection in a place like this. I just hope the tree sent us in the right path, because the wrong path would lead to something far worse than just lost souls. The light grew brighter as we approached it. Soon, I could see a massive fire on the left side of the trail. Blue and orange flames flickered off of it and illuminating everything around for hundreds of feet. In front of it stood a child. She looked only 5 or 6 years old. She had a little blue dress on with dirty blonde hair and blue eyes. As I got closer, I saw she had an ear-to-ear grin on her face.
Go slow, Nathan whispered back to me. Nora looked totally unfazed. She just stared down a few feet in front of her, as if nothing was disturbing about this in any way. The child's head began to turn to the right, and then it kept turning. It spun backwards on her head, her skin on her neck stretching as the bones cracked and the tendons snapped, then finished turning in a complete circle. Blood was pouring from her eyes now, and her teeth had lengthened into points.
"Do you come to join the circle?" she asked in a low, childish voice. "We have many more before you who have come, and they still stay here."
She pointed behind her to the fire, which suddenly went out. I saw blackened, smoking corpses lying on the ground there, still moving their arms and trying to turn their heads, their mouths opened in silent screams.
"We do not come for you," Nora said, looking up and making eye contact with the demonic girl. "And how do you know we then do not come for you in return?" she asked, her face stained forward now. The skin still stretched around her neck in a disturbing, twisted manner.
"We do not appreciate visitors here. This is no place for the living."
Her limbs seemed to lengthen, her broken neck stretching out as her eyes darkened to pure black. Fangs began to emerge from her mouth. The corpses behind her twitching and moaning, trying to scream, but their melted, damaged faces just made small gasping noises. The girl laughed as she transformed into a creature straight out of my worst nightmares.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Her limbs were twisted, broken, and oozing dark blood now. She began to walk towards us on legs that were bones poking out through the skin, each step making a crunching, grinding sound as the broken bones rubbed together. Nora began to chant, her eyes rolling back in her head. The language was low, growling and hissing. It was like nothing I had ever heard before. She reached into her pocket, grabbing a leather pouch and sending a shower of silver dust forward. The demonic girl screamed as it touched her. She began to revert from a mutated, nightmarish creature back to the facade of the sweet little girl that she had taken when we first walked up here. Without hesitation, Nate pulled out his gun and fired at her, hitting her in the stomach. The bullet went right through her small body, sending out a spray of flesh and bone from her back. The girl shrieked at him, her mouth disengaging and opening wide. Her cries were so loud that they made my ears ring. They seemed overlapping and continuous. Then she turned and ran, leaving behind drops of black blood as she fled the scene. Without hesitation, Nora pulled a small glass vial from inside of her satchel. After a minute, she succeeded in capturing some of the blood from the injured creature. It looked like oil in the glass, shimmering and sending off iridescent colors as it splashed back and forth across the vial's bottom surface.
"The blood of an ancient one," she said to herself,
so quietly that I almost didn't hear it at all. I was badly shaken, my hands trembling. The gun Nathan had given me was out, but I didn't really have confidence that I could kill everything here. The little girl shot with this caliber would have been on the ground, bleeding out, but she had just simply been injured and still able to run. As we walked past the moaning, burnt corpses on the ground, Nathan bent over and put a bullet into the foreheads of each one of them in turn. They stopped moving. I was glad. The girl had called these tortured souls her circle. How many more were there in this place just like them, I wondered. I didn't have long to think about it, though.
the scenery was changing all around me. The dark red bleeding trees had begun to thin out, and behind them, I saw endless fields stretching to the horizon in every direction. They weren't growing food, however. Crucifixes had been nailed into the ground in straight rows. Every single one had a body on it. There were thousands of them, maybe tens of thousands. It was impossible to tell. The lines made a sight almost like an optical illusion as the cross symbol was repeated over and over, until they blurred together in the distance and disappeared. Men, women, and children bled from their hands and feet where they had been crucified, dripping flesh blood into the earth below. Ropes had been tied around their arms and legs to add more strength to the bindings, and likely to keep the nails from just ripping out through their palms. They continuously tried to push themselves up from the slanted wooden block their feet were nailed into, taking in a breath as quickly as they could before slumping back down, suffocating as their arms hyperextended their chests backwards. This process repeated over and over, the endless suffocation and pushing up, the collapsing back down, until eventually, the victims were too tired from exhaustion and blood loss to move. At this point, their heads would lull and their eyelids would begin to shut, their lips turning blue as they suffocated on the cross. As I watched, I realized that many had already died. More were joining them every minute. Others looked fresher, and some even screamed out to us, begging for help, pleading for us to let them down and save them from this most horrible of fates. I looked over at Nathan, who was walking directly beside me. "Just ignore them," he said gruffly. "They're not really alive, you know. You couldn't help them if you tried."
"They belong here," Nora said. "They feed the trail. The earth itself feeds on their blood and suffering here. Remember that you were only here for one."
I nodded, reinforcing myself. I had to find my grandfather. The moans and screams followed us for miles. The fields seemed to never end. The dark soil of the trail just twisted through them, serpentine and winding, until finally I saw a break up ahead. The trees started up again, and in the middle of the path, I saw a circular rung of black metal.
"Ah, good," Nora said. "I thought we would never get here."
Closing in, I saw the black metal was actually the railing of a staircase. The trail ended as suddenly as it begun. The cluster of ferns and thorns grew wild beyond it, and the darkness of the forest was nearly impenetrable. I saw white eyes reflecting light back at me as I peered deeper inside. The eyes would have been on bodies at least as tall as me, but no human eye ever reflected in such a silver glow in the dark.
"The endless stairs," Nathan said, peering down.
He wasn't exaggerating. As I looked at the circular railing spiraling down and down, they really did seem endless. Nora knelt beside the stairs, taking a knife and working off some of the grayish-blue soil that started at the top rung and clung to every stair as far as the eye could see. She grabbed a vial and gently poured some of the strange substance into it, sealing it tightly and putting it into her satchel. I grabbed a huge rock from the nearby woods. Out of curiosity, I dropped it down the opening of the center of the circular staircase. It took off, falling faster and faster. Following its promise down so many stories gave me a sense of vertigo and nausea. I had to look away. I listened for a loud clanking noise, or any indication that it had hit the bottom. None came. After about 30 seconds, we all looked at each other.
"Let's do this quickly," she said. "We have nearly everything we need now."
Nathan nodded. I wondered what exactly these two were plotting. "What do you plan to do with all this stuff you're collecting here?" I asked.
She shrugged. "They're just rare and expensive ingredients," she said. "In my line of work, only a fool would waste such an opportunity."
She averted her eyes as she spoke,
and I got the feeling she was lying.
Let's go, Nathan said, pressing the button to release his magazine and refilling it with bullets. This is by far the most dangerous part of the journey. Keep your wits about you and your gun down. We went down the stairs, each of us holding tightly to the rail. The clanging of shoes against metal was the only sound besides the slight breeze that blew through, even down here under the earth. After what seemed like 20 minutes of descending, I saw an aberration in the staircase. A door was built into the wall with a strange symbol etched into the wood. It looked like a backwards 7 with a slash through it. The three of us stood in front of it, examining it. I pressed my hand against the door and realized that it wasn't made of wood. Using my flashlight, I examined it closely. The door was warm and pulsating, and appeared to be wrapped in human skin.
Better open it, Nathan said to me. I looked up at him, then wrapped my hands around the knob. It was warm and pulsating just like the rest of the door. Without a second thought, I turned it and flung it open. We all peered inside. At first, it looked like a curtain of blackness. I shone the flashlight, but it did no good. I walked through. I felt like thousands of small fingers were running along my skin as I entered. The sensation gave me chills. They were cold, hungry, grasping fingers, and they weren't used to the warmth and light of the living. But after a few steps, the darkness broke, and I saw I was standing in a long hallway. The floors, walls, and ceilings were all made of dark stone. Looking back, I saw Nathan and Nora emerge from the cloud of blackness. They nodded at me, looking pale and uncertain.
This is the first circle, Nora said. We should find your grandfather somewhere around here.
A room emerged on the left as we walked further in. I looked in, seeing the horrific scene from my nightmares. Harris McKean stood there, surrounded by the still-living bodies of his family. His wife and daughters were choking on their blood, their lips turning blue as they laid in their beds. They tried to claw their way forwards, ripping at the sheets and mattress, dyeing everything red with their blood. Harris turned to look at us, smiling. The back of his head was missing, but his face was intact.
"Finally, it's almost over," he said. "You fools, you idiots, you woke him up. You woke up the blind god, and now he's coming.
Nathan didn't hesitate. He raised the pistol and started shooting at Harris. Bloody holes opened up all around Harris's chest, and he stopped talking, looking down in surprise. A look of happiness crossed his face as he fell back, his eyes fluttering then closing as an expression of peace came over his unmoving body. I had lost sight of his wife and daughters in the shootout. Looking down, I saw a little girl had crawled right up to me, her slashed throat leaving a blood-red trail from the bed to my feet. Without hesitation, she reached a bony, clawed hand up and raked it down my leg. It shredded my pants, and I felt the puncture go all the way down into my muscle.
"Fuck, she got me!"
I screamed, and started shooting blindly down at the ground. Blood poured down my leg. I stumbled back to the entrance, dragging my bad leg behind me as I went. The three of us got out of there and slammed the door shut.
"Wrong room," Nathan said, sweating heavily. He started laughing.
I sat down and we wrapped a piece of cloth around my leg, tightening it to help stop the bleeding. Luckily, it hadn't punctured any major blood vessels, and I could still walk, but it hurt like hell. There was another room on the left. We opened it. It revealed what looked like a medieval castle's main chamber. Corpses had been skinned alive, their intestines pulled out of their body and spiraling away from them, looking like fleshly, bloody snakes in the light glow of the castle's torchlight. And then, with mounting horror, I realized these weren't corpses at all. The one closest to me raised its head, its face totally missing, its eyes ripped out. I could see every muscle of its head as it turned to speak.
"The blind god is coming," it said. "The blind god did this. The blind god is coming. You're next."
It started coughing, trying to use its flayed body to approach the door. The rest of the people did the same, trying to push themselves up on legs without skin, pulling themselves over small pebbles in the floor that got stuck in their internal organs and started new small cuts all over their front. They started to reach their arms out towards us, moaning and pleading. Some of them had their tongues cut out, and they could only make indiscernible vowel sounds. Most of them wept, at least those who still had eyes. I felt transfixed. I stared at this mass of wretched humanity. Every single one of them was still somehow alive. The floor of the castle was covered in so much glotted thick blood that a slight rippling sound occurred every time one of the people lifted an arm or leg while crawling forwards along the tacky stone. Nathan pulled me back, slamming the door shut.
"Don't look in there," he said.
"There are endless rooms like that one. It will serve you no purpose to go looking in there." "But what if my grandfather is like one of them?" I asked. "What if he was in there?" I felt feverish and panicked. Nathan shook his head.
"I doubt it," he said.
He wouldn't elaborate. We kept walking forwards down the hall. We found another room further down on the right. I opened it, and to my amazement, saw my grandfather's fields. He stood in the middle, totally intact, his back to us. It reminded me of my dream.
"Grandpa!"
I yelled at him. He turned around, his face half torn off.
"Oh my God, Johnny!"
he said, running up to me. The half of his face that was still intact formed a calm smile. I hugged him tight.
"How did you find me?"
"Don't worry about that. Are you okay?" I asked. I immediately regretted asking it. What a stupid question, I thought to myself. My grandfather shook his head.
"I'm sorry, son, but I'm dead," he said. "I was attacked in the fields, dragged here, and died on the way. Something tore half of my face off. I didn't see what it was, but I remember dying. It was cold. Then I woke up here in these fields. But Johnny, I have to tell you, I'm not alone here."
A chill ran down my spine at this.
"What do you mean, not alone?" I asked. "There's something coming," he said, looking back and pointing.
I followed his finger. In the distance, I saw a tiny silhouette. I squinted, trying to make it out. It floated above the ground, moving at a superhuman speed, coming closer to the door. Whatever it was, its eyes had been torn out, leaving just black sockets. It was naked, emaciated and shrieking. It looked at least 10 feet tall, and its shiny black skin clung to its frame tightly. The noise it made was so piercing that I tried to cover my ears as it got closer and closer, but it didn't help in the slightest. I could no longer hear what my grandfather said, but I saw him mouthing the same word over and over. The blind god. We pulled my grandfather forward through the door and slammed it shut. I heard that shrieking nearing, faster and faster. I looked between Nathan and Nora. Nora was slowly taking ingredients out of her pack, as if there was no rush in the world. "Oh yes," she said, turning to Nathan quickly. "This is a perfect spot for the ritual. I could feel the energy flowing through this hallway, dozens of worlds colliding down here in the first circle. What a beautiful sight. What an absolutely powerful feeling." Nathan nodded, sweating heavily. His eyes darted back and forth down the hallway. Then we all heard the blind god on the other side of the door, very close now. His full attention turned to that, but Nora kept talking.
"I forgot to tell you, Nathan. Before I can transcend,
I need one more ingredient, the blood of a betrayed friend. Smiling sweetly, she pulled out a knife and shoved it into Nathan's stomach as she spoke. He fell with a cry and she kicked his gun away. Slowly, methodically, she traced her fingers in the blood that poured out of him onto the stone floor, licking it off with a moan of pleasure. I love it when it's still warm. She knelt down, putting the fronts and backs of her hands in the puddle of blood until they were totally covered, looking like wet crimson gloves pulled tight around her normal skin. As Nathan crawled away, puddles of blood leaking out of him far too fast, she started the ritual. I started to raise the gun to shoot her, maybe in the leg or the arm, to stop her from whatever madness she was preparing to unleash. But with a swift of her hand and a cry, I felt the gun rip out of my grasp and flung down the hallway. She was distracted, however, having already begun the ritual. My gun was far away now, but Nathan's was closer. Using the few seconds of distraction her focus on the ritual allowed me, I sprinted over to it, gripping it off the floor. As I ran towards it, I kept track of Nora out of the corner of my eye. She poured the demon child's blood from the vial in her mouth, then, holding the blood under her tongue, blew the dust from the endless staircase in front of her. Holding out the piece of the Tree of Zakum in front of her, she walked into the cloud of dust. The cloud seemed to sit there, frozen in time, the particles reflecting the sunlight and shimmering, and yet neither moving in the breeze or descending towards the ground. Nora began to scream in pain as she reached the center of the cloud. Her eyes started to melt, dribbling down her cheeks. The skin and muscle holding her jaw in place did likewise, and the jaw fell down lower and lower, held by only increasingly thin tendons and pieces of flesh. The tree root had started to grow, sending out leafy shoots and thick dark roots in all directions over her body. Her silky white skin was soon totally covered in an impenetrable bark. She fell on her knees, vomiting up huge quantities of gore. Soon, it looked like pieces of her stomach and intestines were coming up as well. Her body was changing, morphing, growing before my very eyes. Her spine was stretching, the bones breaking and reforming. Pieces of bone shot out through her fingers and feet, very long and sharp. Soon all of her clothing had ripped away. She was crouched on the floor in a fetal position, sweating blood from the bark-like texture of her skin as bony spines started to shoot up out of her back. This clawed, demonic figure looked nothing like the woman I had come in here with. At that moment, the door smashed into pieces, and the huge creature my grandfather had referred to as the Blind God came into the hallway. Bent double, it barely fit through the shattered door. It looked like a black poisonous snake had merged with a blind giant. Shreds of black robes still clung onto its body in a few places, and giant reptilian claws jutted out of its hands and feet. With a shriek, it ran at the transformed Nora, biting her and raking its claws across her back, puncturing the bark-like skin and sending rivers of red flowing off her. She fought back with equal ferocity, biting with razor-sharp fangs and using her sharpened bony spikes to rip at every exposed area of flesh on that creature's body. "Run!" I said, grabbing my grandfather's shoulder and hauling him away. Nathan stumbled and fell, sending droplets of blood scattering all over the earthen walls. He tried to follow, but he was slow, wavering, grabbing at his sides as he coughed up frothy, bloody spit. We ran back to the staircase, past all the tortured souls who had all screamed out for us. I saw another little girl blocking the trail. Stopping cold in my tracks, I pointed the gun at her head. Without warning, I started firing, using up the entire magazine. Her head and chest had split open. Black, oily fluid dripped out of her as she fell slowly backwards, a demonic grin still plastered across her face. I grabbed my grandfather and got us out of there, even as I looked back. I saw some of her skin starting to stitch itself back together, though she still hadn't risen. But we had almost made it home. I could see the field in my grandfather's house in the distance at the end of the trail, a tiny pinpoint on the horizon that came closer and closer to us with every passing moment. My grandfather took my hand and we ran towards the entrance of the trail, squeezing it reassuringly. I was seeing spots from running so long. My chest had stitches all up and down it, but I wasn't slowing down until I was safe and away from this insane place.
"You did the right thing, son,"
he said through gasps, tears running down part of his face, blood streaming down the rest.
"I never deserved a grandson as good as you."
And then we hit the invisible wall dividing my grandfather's property from this trail. As we ran through it, I felt his grip slacken, then release. Looking over, I saw his body rapidly fade, dissolving and blowing away in the wind. I had freed him from this cursed place. I looked back and to my total surprise saw Nathan still alive. He was a little off in the distance, at least a quarter of a mile, limping slowly, his clothing covered in blood. He came through the barrier, collapsing in my arms, hyperventilating and in clear pain.
"Please," he said, "help me. It hurts so bad."
I laid him down on the soft dirt of the field and called an ambulance. I lit a cigarette as I waited, thinking about all the unbelievable things that had just happened, wondering if Nora was still alive, or if she was right now being tortured by that insane and blind monstrosity we had encountered. But as I listened to Nathan's ragged breathing and moans of pain, I knew one thing for certain. I used to be afraid of my nightmares, waking up every night in a sweat, screaming at the darkness. But I'm not afraid of them anymore. Now I know waking life is so much worse.